Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Talking Cop. It's Sunday night, it's the 10th of March, it's Liverpool 1, Man City 1 at Anfield earlier on. Puts Arsenal top of the league on goal difference from Liverpool. City a further point back, 10 games to go. Arsenal play City in 3 weeks' time. And myself, Emma and Keith are going to talk through it all. Now, this show, as always, comes after the post-match reaction where the lads go through all the incidents and stuff like that. It is on YouTube. It will be available to download later, so go and check that out. The lads, of course, done a great job. Kev, Matt and Luke were on after the game. So we do a little bit different, as you know. We're going to talk through the stages of the game. We talk about a few players, which could take all night because I thought they were all great. And then we talk about some incidents that happened in the game. And see where we go. Emma, first of all, overall, it's just a phenomenal game of football. I think the quality on show from both sides in the game was phenomenal. We'll talk through the stages in a minute, but like sometimes you just have to sit back and go, Jesus Christ, these are just fucking incredible footballers playing at an incredible pace, and they're throwing out that sort of quality at that pace and intensity is off the charts, isn't it?
It's like I was blown away. Like I've seen Liverpool teams that are good, right? And I won't go overboard because it's 45, maybe 60 minutes or so of the game. But I thought they were they literally battered City 1-0, which and possibly could have gone on and won it. But like City gave up for me We literally had them under the cosh. I don't think I've ever seen any other team do that to City. Maybe another Liverpool have probably done it to City before, but I've never seen. And you have to remember, City have all. I think they have all of their squad available. Have they any injuries? I don't think so. We had six lads starting that game today that probably, with everybody back and fit, probably wouldn't be starting. With everybody back and fit, Kwanzaa probably would have only played a handful of games this season. But Bradley is again. I said it last week, and at the fear risk of repeating myself, he's an absolute revelation. It's like he's been doing this. He's like a seasoned pro, and he was literally bullying their players as well. But it's
Grealish is out.
Blown away by. That's it.
And Arsenal. He's just
I know. Sorry, Pat. Or Passio, sorry. An unbelievable performance. But it's what we've come to expect now from this team. It's great determination. Probably for the first 15, 20 minutes, City were the better team. But to me, it was like we were saying, let's see what you have, basically. And then we just decided, right, well, we're taking over now. And I know they had little chances later on in the game as well, but I think we dominated that game for 60 minutes, I think.
It's hard to argue with it, that we dominated it. Look, for me, the quality on show from both teams was ridiculous. And, you know, I've heard a few people saying after, like, these are the best two teams in the country. When these games come, it's the best, it's the highest quality game that the Premier League produces. And it's hard to argue against that. I think, and I don't want to downplay Arsenal because I think Arsenal have stood up to both City and Liverpool this season. You know, Arsenal have drawn at Anfield and won at the Emirates against us. We are really poor at the Emirates, but Arsenal won the game. I think Arsenal and City earlier on in the season at the Emirates was a poor game, overall. But this today for me was just like stages where, you know, like you said there, the first 15, 20, I think City come out strong. And I actually think you could kind of see City's game plan from early on where come out strong, get a goal, and then see if we can control the game, quiet in the crowd, you know, which they were never going to do, but quiet in the crowd, take control, keep a lot of possession, look to be solid and look to pick Liverpool off if they possibly can. And it backfired on them a little bit because it just roiled Liverpool. And when you make a mistake and Liverpool capitalise on that mistake, then you're in serious trouble. And there was 40 plus minutes left when they do that. But Keith, like, let's go back to the start because, you know, there was talk Joe Gomez might play because Divock Origi, where the fuck did that come from? Ibrahim Konate wasn't seen getting off the bus or going for a walk or whatever it was, right? And there was talk of Gomez might play centre half, but I really wanted Quanta to play because I thought, no, he's your third choice centre half all season. You know, he should play. But when you see the lineups, Keith, were you worried? Because, you know, we have no Alisson, we have no Trent, Konate is out, we've no Jones, we've no Jota, Salah's only on the bench. There's players missing every, you know, no Gravenberch, you know, Szoboszlai's coming back from an injury. There's loads going on there. Were you worried? Because I'm going to be honest, I didn't think at any stage today Liverpool were losing this game.
Yeah, it's strange, Gav, because you look at the team, you look at the lineup, you look at the players who are missing, and I hate this nonsense when people come out with, oh, we're missing more. We've missed so many players, have missed so many minutes. You look at the key players that Liverpool are missing. You're missing your goalkeeper, you're missing Trent, you're missing fucking Matip, you're missing Jota, you're missing Thiago, you're missing all these players that would be starting players, you know, and it's frustrating that we lose them. But what this season has shown, unlike seasons past, is that this team is standing up and it's being counted. So, you know, if this game had happened 4 weeks ago or whatever, and we'd only lost a raft of players and Kelleher was being dropped in cold, you might think, oh, I don't know about that, or Conor Bradley is coming in for his first game. You know, instead, and it's only taken like a run of 4 or 5 games, you know, Kevin Kelleher has been absolutely sensational for Liverpool at the moment. Absolutely. He is not getting the flowers at all, but I think he has been absolutely brilliant. To lose a keeper like Alisson and not miss a beat tells you all we need. So I think these, we'll call them backup players, squad players, they've earned their trust. They've earned the fans' trust to go into this game today against a full-strength Man City team. Because I know Pacio says Jack Grealish is injured. He's at 50-50 whether he starts or not. You know, he was excellent against us in the past. I'm not downplaying Jack Grealish, but it's not like they were digging deep into their bleeding new team to replace him. Do you know what I mean? Like, so that was a full-strength Man City team. And we went in there. And, well, you're probably looking at it and you're listening to the narrative around it being that Man City are hot favourites because of the strength of the teams. You probably do think a little bit like, right, we have to be at it, because if we're not at it, they'll steamroll us. And it turned out that we weren't really at it and they didn't steamroll us. And I think that's testament to these lads. I done a tweet there earlier and I said, every single one of that starting 11 has come in for criticism. If not this season, certainly last year. Virgil van Dijk, you know, he's no exception. Virgil van Dijk got criticism that he was finished. He only made a comment after the League Cup final, wasn't it? When he said it was finished. Quevin Kelleher criticised constantly. Joe Gomez criticised constantly. Bradley questions about him being young. Quanta questions about him being young. Endo criticised by our own fans for months. Alexis McAllister criticised by our own fans. Dominic Szoboszlai currently sort of being criticised before his injury that he'd gone off the boil. Luis Diaz criticised by our own fans. Harvey Elliott criticised by our own fans, and who's your own, Darwin, criticised by everybody. This is not a team, this is not a well-oiled machine in the eyes of Joe Public, you know, outside the Liverpool sphere. But what we see and what we watch every week is we see a squad now where whoever you're dropping in, they're all playing for that manager, they're all playing for that shirt, they're working their bollocks off. And it's a testament to Jurgen Klopp. This is Jurgen Klopp's legacy for me, is that he has these boys whipped up into shape. It's taken a long time to get the academy aligned with the first team. But we're looking at a team there where Kelleher, Kwanzaa, Bradley and Elliot are all playing and are all standouts. All four of them standout performers against Man City. In a, wouldn't say a make or break title game, but in a certainly one of the biggest games of the season. I'd say our biggest game of the season, you know. So to see these boys do that, I think is absolutely outrageously good by Liverpool and everything we've done right. So well, you might have been a bit, going back to the question, you might be a little bit apprehensive about the lineups, Gav. I think they've earned their trust, and I think whoever we put out, you know, you look at it today, you said it about Kwanzaa, if he's going to be a third choice centre-back, play the kid in centre-back.
Yeah, he's third choice whether you're playing Luton or Man City. Yeah. That's just the way it is. Like,
I think that showed it today. I think that, that sort of nailed that down.
Yeah, I tell you what, like, we're going to get into some players and we'll try whip through them as quick as we can because we could wax lyrical about a lot of them. Michael Kilbam with a super chat. He says, Cara is just part of the Sky pandemonium now. It's hard to watch laughing and joking while refs decide titles. And Singh G with a super chat also says, hope you're all well. Not sure why the ref wasn't told to check the screen. Do you think we will have enough regardless of result? Endo was incredible man of the match. I'm reading those two out because they're super chats. They're both on the subject of the late Doku challenge, which we will get to a little bit because we don't want to jump into the start of a show and then just talk about the end bit for an hour and then head off, right? Because I want to kind of do a lot of players justice, I suppose, in the grander scheme of things. But, you know, we're going into this game. I think look, the outlooks, because it's interesting you said that, Emmett, we were probably looking at them going, right, what have you got? What way are you going to set up? You know, because I think what usually happens between us and City at Anfield and is that City usually look at us to come out and go, what have you got? And hold out and then try to get themselves into the game a bit more. And the last time I remember them actually dominating us for the first 10 minutes of a game was actually, it might have been the European Cup game where we went 3-0. The first goal is where Salah goes down the side. Do you remember Milner puts him down the side and it kind of goes to Firmino and he flicks it onto Salah and Salah puts it in the roof. And I think it is the Champions League game, but that was a game where first time and City were just bang, bang, bang at it. And usually City come out and they're a bit kind of, you know, it's a bit to and fro. But today, Emma, you know, you were saying there, you felt like they were looking to see, you know, we were looking to see what City have. But looking at from the City side of it just for a minute, do you think they were looking at it going, right, these are players towards the night. They went stronger than we thought he would. You know, Kanate's dropped out of that side. That's Kwanzaa in there. Bradley's going to play. Kelleher's going to play. Elliot's going to play. Do you know what I mean? With the players we have available and stuff like that. But do you think City looked at it and went, right, best way to quieten this down is to go out, go at them, get a goal, and then try quieting it, try nick another one, wherever it might be. Because for the first 20, I thought Liverpool were trying to get into the game, but City looked a lot more potent. City were looking like they looked braver than usually City would at Anfield. They looked very brave in what they were doing. And then it just changes after 20. It was a bit of a mad one, wasn't it? And Pep was probably thinking, if I sit off here and let these build a head of steam, I might struggle to wrestle it back. Let's go out and try fucking build our own head of steam early.
Yeah, especially with the crowd. I mean, the crowd today, like from, so somebody was saying from, there was people around the ground from 10, 11 o'clock this morning. But yeah, City will look at us. They would think that we're possibly vulnerable, given the players that we have missing. And probably decided, let's get this crowd quieting down. There was actually a tackle that Walker did as well. And don't forget that they have in the back of their minds, and people say, professional footballers don't think that way. They still have Trent's comments in the back of their head because you could see them all losing their heads online. Walker puts in a tackle. I can't remember who it is on. And he turns around to everybody and he goes, like he makes this kind of get stuck into them. And I think that's what was, that was what their plan was, is to try and quieten the crowd down. But I don't think there was any quieting in that crowd. And then any of those tackles or anything like that only got the crowd up more. But that's what they would have wanted to do. That's what they would have hoping to do, was to quieten the crowd down and maybe have us on the back foot. But we've seen it with this team all through this season. It doesn't matter whether they're a goal down, a man down. They're not going away. They just are not going away till the 98th minute, 99th minute, whatever way you want to look at it. I'd say they were probably testing that to try and see if we would fold. I didn't at any point think that we were going to fold. I thought we were probably, here we go, we're starting slow again. But again, I thought as the game went on, we were literally just having a look at them. But I'd say that the plan was to go out and try and blitz us and try and quieten the crowd down. I don't think I've heard the City. I didn't hear the City fans at all once today. Maybe straight after they scored, but I think that was probably about it. But I'd say that the plan was to quieten the crowd and basically test this kind of young, inexperienced team. Like, you've got one person, Virgil van Dijk, from what you would class as being your starting five, back five. No Alisson, no Trent, no Robbo, no Konate, stroke and or Matip. So I'd imagine that's what the plan was. But, I mean, he has it in the back of his head as well. He's never won at Anfield. And against Jurgen Klopp, will never win at Anfield.
Who hasn't?
In front of a crowd.
Oh, in front of a crowd, yeah. Pep. Yeah, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he hasn't.
But
yeah,
that's what and we all know that Pep's a bit of a weirdo, and he has that kind of... He wanted that one over him today. And I think, I don't want to say his players gave up, and I'm sure we'll get to it going through individual players, but when you can make what people class as the best midfielder ever to grace the Premier League, or a lot of people would suggest, when you have a player in your team that literally makes him practically pull a Bruno Fernandes and throw his hands up in the air and start, like, you know you're doing something right.
Yeah. Keith, they opened the scoring, and you know they have a for me in the first, you know, and I always find it difficult to remember all this stuff, but they scored after 23 minutes, sorry, and I feel like for the first 20-25 minutes, I think Liverpool have two or three shots. So I don't think that on target, you know, and City looked a bit more dangerous, and I think it's funny because I think City looked more dangerous, even though City look like they're the braver team, I suppose. I think it is. The word brave is probably the term to use. Everything from City seemed to be where Liverpool were trying to catch Liverpool on the break. And it wasn't like City were sitting right back and going, we're playing on the break. It was just like, let them advance a certain amount and then we'll really try hit them. And they were trying to get Foden away. They were trying to get Haaland away, Alvarez, Bernardo Silva. They were all trying to find these pockets on the break to hurt Liverpool. And they score after 23. And when they scored, it wasn't like I said to myself, oh, that's been coming. It was a bit like, you know, we've been a little bit open here. And we're done by a set piece. It's a really clever goal from City. Let's be fair. It's a really clever goal. We see Ake moves McAllister out of the way, I think it is. And Stones whips in. And Keller's very unlucky, actually, because, you know, Keller's no business even getting close to that, but he nearly saves it. A lot of people are shouting, you know, oh, is he blocking them off? Is he, you know, does he block off the run? He doesn't. He actually gets in contact with him, and he's very clever in what he does, in the way he makes contact with the player, sticks to the player, and kind of jostles him rather than just run or look away from the ball. But were you worried then, Keith? Because it is a clever goal. City have gone one up, and their plan will be, if you're up after 25, you know, we're looking slightly the better side. We're restricting Liverpool to a certain extent, and now we've got our lead. You know, could you see the game going where Liverpool push, and that's what City want, and then they can try hard us.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say City were a better team at that point.
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
I think, but I'm going to caveat that, without looking overly threatening. Do you know what I mean? Like, so they're finding space in their final third. They're a couple of shots, couple of pot shots from De Bruyne and that. And it's, you know, like I said, it's little tiddlers, little feeling out. And then they score, and it's a great goal. Look, let's be honest, it's a great goal. Technically, is it a foul by Ake blocking? You're allowed block, I think you're a little
I don't think
it
was a block, you see. I think what he does is he just maneuvers him out of the way.
No, I think he moves him. I think he shifts him out, right? I thought it was funny when Mike Dean actually said it wasn't because it was McAllister dragging Ake, which was a load of bollocks, but we'll talk about him in a while as well, I'm sure. I think it's well worked. I think Man City are very clever. I think they've done it to us at the Etihad twice or three times when this season, when Akanji, was it, and Diaz were standing on top of Alisson. And they were putting corners in and not letting them move. We got, not that we got lucky, but that they got chalked off, a goal or two got chalked off. But I think they see a weakness in us defending corners, obviously. And they know the way we set up. And looking back at the goal, we're set up dreadfully. We're set up for an out swinger and they caught us by the bollocks. And look, it is what it is. It's a very clever, well-worked goal. It has to be a good delivery by De Bruyne. Stones has to make that run. He says it in his post-match interview that they worked on it. It's very clever. I agree. Kelleher can't do much there. It could just hit off him, like with Darwin Nunez on Ortega in the second half, and he's just hitting at a keeper and he saves it. He could get something on it and save it, but it just goes through him. It's a very well-worked goal. And the worry then is that, you crumble, as you say, you go chasing the game, and if they get a second one, we're goosed. But this Liverpool team has shown all season that, you know, going to go behind, I know it's Emmett's theory that we let these teams do this, but we go a goal behind.
Yeah, we definitely went in and went, listen, let's see, you got 1-0 up after 23 here.
Lull them into a false sense.
This is the plan.
Leave the front post wide open there, will you?
As stupid as it sounds, like, we don't panic. And I can't speak for yous to our people listening. Like, we don't tend to panic when Liverpool concede a goal. Right, if they concede a quick second one, or you can see that at time, you know, right before or after half time, our plans go out the window. We really just thought Liverpool started to get back into that game, and City were the architects of their own downfall, because in the first half after that goal, they were so sloppy with the ball out of the defence. You know, they were so sloppy. It was unreal.
And that's where I think that the next phase of the game comes. You know, like Bob said earlier, I had it up on screen. Sorry, Bob, I lost it. He said, like, it was a sloppy goal to concede. And Dylan says, a few times we've been caught up by set pieces in these big games that happened at Anfield with Gabriel. And I get where you're coming from there. I think that, don't think the setup's right. I don't think the fella marking the front post should be anywhere near a Man City player. Like, if I'm standing at the front post and Ake comes to me, I'm saying to someone, you take him. I'm literally the free man here and I'm patrolling this corner of the 6-yard box. So to be in the position where you're jostling with a Man City player is an issue. Liverpool should probably have an extra player in there. But again, you know, credit where it's due to Man City with the setup, because De Bruyne, it's a tough ball to put in there. Like, as good as he is, to hit it at that pace, you know, along there and timing it. Like, it's not only doing it, it's the timing of it. Ake has to move the pace at the right time. You know, it's a good goal, and they're cheating fucks, and they should be banned.
It's with his right foot as well.
Yeah. And they're cheating fucks, and they should be fucked out
for football. For an outswinger. So it's very difficult.
But look, it was one of those, but we got 1-0 down. And that's where the next phase comes, Emma, right? Because, and I kind of want to go through this phase, and then we'll talk about the second half. We'll start getting into players. I expected City, and I actually ended up, when I was setting up the show, I was listening to Gary Neville's podcast after, and he was saying pretty similar. And for me, Gary Neville would be saying, thinking something similar is fucking, like, you know, I'm going to have to throw holy water over myself later. But he was saying what I was thinking as well. He was surprised at Man City after that, because that's the time when, you know, you're halfway through the first half, you're 1-0 up, you probably take 5 minutes to set yourself and get, you know, make sure you survive the next 5 minutes, and then you go and look to make it 2. Because, as Neville said, if you give Liverpool a sniff, and like you've said, Emma, Liverpool will go for 98 minutes, and any little piece of, you know, encouragement you give them, they'll pounce on it. But City seemed to go into the shell a little bit. It was like, let's not, you know, protect this for 5 minutes. It was like, let's protect this for as long as we can. And it just steadily gets worse for them. That's all they end up doing. They actually start to put it in kind of a visual term, it's like them starting their back four 40 yards from their goal, right? And as the game goes on, the back four just keeps dropping back and back and back and back and back. And City, believe it or not, are a much better team in a condensed area because they move you around really quickly and then they make their space. But does City's head go then? Because when you look back, right, I think when you watch back this game, I think you just see City going, oh, like nearly like, oh, we're in front. You know, now let's just hold on to this. Because I think they're terrified of the crowd getting involved. And they just, their way home, Emma, is keep them quiet, restrict them, keep them quiet, not go and win the game, not go and actually put their foot on the throat.
But the quiet in the crowd is to put the foot on the throat. That's the only way you're quieting.
This is what I'm saying. But what there's the wrong theory to this.
Yeah, yeah. So they literally went into like a nearly like a low block. They just invited us on, and that only gets the crowd up even more. And that's where, and I looked at the clock, and I thought we kind of nearly started getting back into the game around about the 15-minute mark. I know they score on the 23rd minute. So at that stage, I thought we had 8 minutes where we were actually the better side. So funnily enough, I thought that the goal was nearly against the run of play. I thought, geez, yeah, we're in this now. But yeah, for them to sit back and invite us on, look, Pep with his head magic, it was obviously planned. The players just didn't decide to do that themselves. And we've spoken before where it's a case of, with Liverpool and maybe with other teams as well, that they sit back and then Liverpool kind of build up this head of steam. And they're 5 minutes then where they say, right, we'll go back and play. They just haven't got that to click in to the next gear to pick up the pace again. And that's what it felt like. And they just kept inviting us on, inviting us on, inviting us on. And we really got into the game then. And that's what I said. First comment, I think from that point on, we dominate the game. And I don't know what the thinking is behind it from City, but it's probably the worst thing that they could have possibly done. Like you said, maybe for 2-3 minutes, 5 minutes, sit back, gather your thoughts, what do we do next? But they just didn't seem to come back out of that again for the rest of the game. And literally that gave us the impetus to go on and dominate the game.
Sam says, City tried to play against 60,000 fans rather than the 11 players they were on against on the pitch. That was their problem, in my opinion. I think that was the biggest thing in their heads. Because all week, everything coming out of Liverpool, you know, the fan base and social media and everything was like, right, this is it now. Where everyone's going to be at the ground from fucking 1:30, 2:00. Where the bus is coming in. We're going to make this fucking, you know, we're going to make all this noise, all this colour. And people think, ah, why are they doing that? You know, like, does that do anything? It clearly does. Because City's approach to this game, I don't think it was a tactical one. I think it was a mental one.
Emotional,
I think
it was,
yeah, emotional kind of mental thinking of, if we can stop all these people around this, that in turn will stop all the 11 lads in front of us. And I think Sam has a really good point there. They literally look, they go out in the start, to quiet in the crowd and take control of a game. They go ahead, and then they look to quiet in the crowd again by just restricting Liverpool. If City had went and said, right, we changed nothing now after going 1-0. Let's keep playing. City were finding space. There's no doubt about it. Liverpool were playing really well, and we're getting into the game more and more, like you said, from 15 minutes on. Liverpool were steadily getting better, but City were still finding spots. They were still finding areas, you know, where they could hurt Liverpool. And in fairness to them, they look terrifying when they go forward. Like, they fucking look terrifying. Like that. And I don't like any of them. None of the players are likeable. Absolutely fucking none of them. But I can tell you, and I'm saying it years, Foden is a fucking joke of a footballer. Like, he is quick. He's quicker than you fucking think. He's good on both feet. Great control. Sees a pass. Wall passes. Goes around people. He is a... I want to say that before, you know, we get on to just forgetting about Damon Thomas. Liverpool... He is a joke of a footballer. He is so fucking good. It's just the fact that he has a short number tattooed on his fucking neck just doesn't. You know, like, he has to check in the mirror.
They have a team of unlikable shams.
Oh, like, there's just none of them that are likable. The only one I think that might be just a little bit likable, maybe Haaland. Maybe Haaland. Yeah, I think there's a side. I think there's a side to Haaland where he's a winner. But I think there's part of him where he kind of goes, I am finished training, fuck football, I'm going off the bleed and do something else. You know, there's a bit of that to him. I think there is a bit of that to Haaland.
I've never seen a team as easily rattled as them. and including Haaland, because he's biting back at Trent's comments during the week with snidey little snips.
Yeah, but you see, this isn't about the game. You see,
but that's their mentality. I think on the emotional and the mental side of it, I think they get affected too much, far too much, by this fixture every single year. And I think even the likes of Haaland falls for it. Haaland was dreadful there last year as well. Was it at Anfield when Joe Gomez was playing centre back and Van Dijk?
Yeah, and Haaland was actually terrible away at Arsenal. He was brutal. But the thing is, the Trent stuff is interesting, because Trent says that knowing that they can't honestly answer what he's saying, because they know exactly what Trent is saying and they know exactly what they can say to rebut it. You know, the sort of way. Like, if they hadn't got all them charges hanging over them, they'd be going, well, you know, it means as much to us. What's our problem? Like, and Trent knows what he's doing. He drops a bomb and fucks off. Do you know what I mean? And they're all reacting.
Those comments were a couple of months ago, by the way.
They come up this week, and then of course, now.
And the best thing that anybody could have done was drag that up this week.
Yeah, but then you have
that got into their heads big time.
Yeah.
Noel Gallagher gets on the radio then and starts calling Trent a simpleton and all that. Like, Noel Gallagher, I don't know any more of his songs. I don't know any of his songs anymore. If he's not like the Oasis ones, the classics. But now literally Noel and Liam Gallagher are just quoted on radio shows talking about Liverpool. That's all they do. It's the only relevance they have. Someone says, what about Kev the Red? Kevin De Bruyne isn't likable anymore because he's growing his hair like that. And it's just like, what are you doing?
Don't mind him.
Yeah, no, he's a fantastic footballer, but no, not for me.
I think it's a hard one to rule him out on.
I would rule him out. He's not like him.
It's shocking.
The hair is atrocious. But going back to more serious matters, you know, we get to halftime, right?
In the first half, there's also the bit where Haaland runs through and Van Dijk just bleeding. Absolutely jockeys him, and I think that was a huge turning point in the game, because I think after that moment Haaland is like, this isn't for me. You know, the one where he's running at him yes. And Van Dijk is showing him yeah. And he's backpedaling and he's going one way and he's going the other way, puts him to his left side, which he's left footed, but he never looked like scoring it. And I think that was a huge turning point in the game, because I don't think Haaland was a threat at all after that. I think it was against Inter Milan when Van Dijk skinned Lautaro Martinez.
Yeah.
And
it's like the one with Spurs. What's his name? Sissoko.
Sissoko, wasn't it?
And he doesn't know where to go. And Van Dijk's going, you're going down the left-hand side here. But it's just, you're not passing it to that fella. But the funny thing about that one is, Keith, and it is a big moment, because I think it takes the belief out of, if we can get Haaland one-on-one here, we're in business.
That's what I mean. I think it knocks
him. The thing is, watch when it drops to Haaland. Van Dijk immediately nearly does a full 360 to go, right, is there anybody over there? Because if there's anyone over there, I'm pushing this fella down the left, but he doesn't. And what he does is he actually sees no one there, so he says, right, now I'm just going to go. And if you're going to go that way, go on. And I'm waiting. And the whole thing on this is that Van Dijk is going to reduce the angle at some stage and trust his goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Right? Now, if Haaland smashes that low and it goes across Keller and goes in the net, people go, we never made a tackle. Do you remember the one where
Sheffield United earlier
on the season, where he literally just shepherded this fella that ended up doing nothing, and people are like, why isn't he trying to attack him? Like, he's literally just defending, but he trusts his goalkeeper, where he says, I'll reduce this angle as much as I can. I won't come in. I'll put myself between him and the goal, and I'll make him take a shot, and I'll keep reducing the angle, and I'll trust you to deal with it. And it's dealt with, and it is a huge moment, because I think that takes a little bit of belief out of Haaland. You know, I think it takes a little bit of belief out of him, and I think it takes a little bit of belief out of City, where if we can get Haaland one-on-one, you know, we can hurt him, and he just kind of says, no, I'll just shepherd you to a point where our keeper will save it. But when half time comes, Emma, I'm looking towards the bench, right? And the reason I'm looking towards the bench is because I know Szoboszlai hasn't got much in him. I know Salah will be gunning to get on. I know Elliot's played a lot of minutes, but we'll get on to Elliot in a little bit. And I'm looking at, you know, Gomez has played a lot. Bradley's played a lot. I'm looking around. And then I'm saying, what have we got off the bench? Have we enough off the bench? But my biggest thing is, we're growing into this game to halftime, and Klopp's brilliant at halftime. And we just reset ourselves. And Emmett, honestly, like, Villa do a job on City earlier on the season where they're just incessant on them, right? Incessantly pressing them and reducing them to next. But this, for me, in the second half, was Liverpool just deciding, no. We've had enough of this now. You've had your chance. You've scored. You had another 25 minutes after that if you wanted to try go and beat us, and you decided you don't want to. So now we're going to play our game. And it just ratchets up, Emma, minute by minute by minute. And 5 minutes it takes before Ake, what is he fucking doing? Like, the pass is appalling.
47th,
yeah, I think by the time it goes in and everything.
But that was coming, wasn't it? Like, the first half, they were so loose in possession at the back.
There was a lack of movement off. They stopped moving. They literally went, it was just a containing job. That's what it was. But it was way too early. But Ake, it's a terrible pass back, but Nunez is sharp as a tack, and he's in, and it's a clear penalty, and it's a yellow card. You're not getting a keeper sent off of that. But you could see by Guardiola's reaction, fuck. We're literally a full half of football to play here, and we've given them a goal to come back from 1-0 down, and now it's going to get fucking messy. Now it's going to be carnage. And I was rubbing my hands, Emma. I was like, this is where we get going. And McAllister sticks away brilliantly, doesn't he?
Perfect height, just out of reach. When I saw him going the right way, I thought, oh. because like you said, there was about 3 minutes between when the actual foul happens and when he gets to take it.
Yeah.
And
I think the goal's actually officially gone down as a 50th minute penalty.
3.5 minutes, I think they said.
Yeah. I put it into the WhatsApp. I said, somebody just get McAllister away from there, because when you've too much time to think, you overthink.
Yeah.
Well, he took himself away in the end.
Yeah, did you see the video of him doing the keepy ups?
Yeah, somebody says there, did anybody see the video of him doing the keepy ups? Yeah.
So, but look, Pep's heart would have fallen out of his arse right there and then. Like, 2 minutes into the second half, again, going into the half, it probably would have been just keep us at arm's length for as long as you could possibly keep us at arm's length, and it lasted 2 minutes. And then
the penalties awarded in the 47th and scored in the 50th.
Yeah. So game plan out the window. And look, we all know City, the City are at their best when you give them time on the ball. And just from that second half, from the minute the whistle blew, they weren't getting a second. And we're all over them. And like you said there, we kind of grow into it. And it's kind of like we've conserved energy and all. And I know I said that earlier on the season. But it was just like, right, now we're going to start. You didn't put your foot on the throat. Now we're going to start putting our foot on your throat. Mm. And that was it from there till the end of the game. Like, I'm trying to hold myself back from getting onto individual players. Like, but literally, single one of them to a man.
Yeah.
Just ran themselves into the ground.
Mm.
And it was just beautiful to see.
It's for me, like, when you look at it and when you looking at it from a City point of view again, just a little bit, Pep's going out there and he's thinking to himself, first 10 here, don't give anything stupid away. But I think what he fails to realise here is that Liverpool are pressing higher. And they've kind of compacted where they are. They're not leaving them spaces in between, particularly our defenders and our midfielders, where, you know, Silva, Alvarez, Foden were picking up pockets, and De Bruyne were picking up these pockets and then being able to turn and look to play. And the ball out to Foden was a very popular one in the first half. But what he fails to realise is that City are slower on the ball, right? And City are really good side when you press them, because what they do is they just trust themselves to go bang, 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 bang. And next thing you know, one of the fucking five players ahead of Rodri has it and he's turning and he's looking towards your goal. City stop doing that. City start playing passes and looking at each other going, here, I've given you that ball and I'm not going to move. You know, and a lot of time when a City player plays a pass to somebody and moves, they don't get it back. What happens is someone gets attracted out of space, someone moves into the space he's vacated, and they get it back. And they play in really small areas of the pitch and continuously move up the pitch as they go. But Guardiola doesn't see that. He just seems to be, and again, going back to Sam's point from earlier, they're playing the crowd. Just keep the ball, just keep it out any way we can, instead of being progressive with it. And City make their own trouble. They really do. And getting on to individual players, I don't know where you want to start. Will we start back the front? I want to start in the back. I want to start in Kelleher. You know, Going back a good few weeks ago, Peter Smith was not happy with Kelleher after the Fulham game. I think it was. He was like, no, not having him. You know, and since then, Pete's kind of said, no, look, he's been absolutely excellent. But Keith, again today, like, we'll go over how good Liverpool were in the second half by talking about these players. But again today, Keith, you know, he makes some big saves. He's unlucky for the goal. He makes some big saves. He makes one from Foden, where Foden's through on the right-hand side, comes out like a light to block him. His distribution was really good. And, you know, it looks like Alisson's going to be out for the majority of the season. If he's back for the last two games, maybe. He might get back for something, two or three games, maybe. But again, he was just excellent in goal, Keith. Like, are we at the stage where, and I don't want to heap too much pressure on him, but are we at the stage now where we just go, yeah, just Kelleher's in goal? Like, why are we even the fucking discussing it?
Yeah. I think we have to be. I mean,
yeah.
He's brilliant. Sean, you put it in the WhatsApp earlier about, you know, play Adrian, the dead rubber against Sparta Prague, and we have to look at protecting him, because I was at the Fulham game Pete was talking about, and, you know, when you're at a match, you don't get a good idea, really, of the goals until you see them back. But even in the stadium, he looked like he made the goal huge. Do you know what I mean? He didn't have an aura about him. And the problem for Kelleher and any sort of reserve keeper is when you're getting dropped in here and there, it's really hard to establish momentum, to get yourself confident and comfortable. But even in that game, he was excellent with his feet. He was, you know, dishing balls, left foot, right foot. I think he's absolutely brilliant off both feet. It's unbelievable how good he is off both feet.
He doesn't look like a goalkeeper kicking a football. He looks like a footballer kicking a football.
He does, yeah. And it's crazy, like, because I remember looking at it in the ground and I was like, this fella's absolutely brilliant with his feet. And the goals go in and you're like, he doesn't impose himself on it. He's too small. He makes himself small. Goals that are going past him. And maybe that was harsh, but who knows? What we then saw was an extended run in the team. And we're seeing a keeper who is, in my opinion, it's been said before, the best number two keeper in the league. I think he's making a case for himself. No, I won't say. No. I think he's a good keeper. I think he's making a case for himself to be the Liverpool number one in the future. That's what I think he's doing. If he's happy to play the waiting game and the long game. Alisson is unbelievable. Picks up a lot of injuries, frustratingly. And who knows what happens when Jurgen Klopp leaves. Alisson came out and said, I want to leave, I wouldn't be looking to spend 80, 90 million to replace him. I would be looking to say, right, there you go. There's your keeper for the future. And I wouldn't be too unhappy with that. I know it's the heat of the moment stuff, and we're saying that after a good run of games, but I think you have to play, especially as a goalkeeper, you have to play to develop a rhythm and to hone your skill set. And I think we're seeing that with the kid. Is he as good as Alisson? Of course he isn't. Is he as good as a lot of the keepers in the league, the top keepers? Maybe not. But can he get there? I think he can. I think his progression has shown that he can get there. And I think that's the best thing we could say about him. I'm not saying sell Alisson and make Weaver in the number one. But I just think he's given himself an opportunity to be our number one in the future if he's willing to play that waiting game. Because the kid is brilliant. He's so cool. He is always cold, that kid.
I think, and like, in fairness, I know I want to get to Cantor says, the biggest compliment you can give Kelleher is we are not missing Alisson. Now, I think that's a fair point, right? Now, Alisson is the best goalkeeper in the world. There's no doubt about it. He's just the best in the world, right? But what I'm saying is that when was Fulham?
December.
Yeah, so it wasn't even this year.
November or something.
Right? Yeah, it wasn't even this year. So literally we're talking about, I think, one possible mistake at Fulham. I think the other goal, I just think, is a goal. You know, the sort of way. Like, we are missing Alisson because he's fucking deadly. But what I'm saying is we're literally making conversation about Kelleher every game nearly now, where we go, he was just fucking brilliant, wasn't he? And some games we go, he wasn't brilliant, he just done what he had to do. But today I thought he was really, really good. The other night against Sparta, that save he makes at the back post is unbelievable, by the way. The one at the back post and Gomez, gets rid of it. It might go in actually if Gomez isn't there, but the attempt at the save is fucking phenomenal. And listen, let's caveat this with one thing. Quivey and Kelleher may make a mistake between now and the end of the season, right? And that may happen. But the last thing you want is, if he makes a mistake, people going, oh, fucking told you, Alisson wouldn't do that. And you're like, no, Alisson does do that. Every keeper does it. Every fucking single keeper. But the what stands one from the other is, A, how many of them do they make? And B, how to react to that mistake.
That's the key.
And the thing is, when Alisson makes a mistake, he's usually brilliant for the rest of the game. And for 20 games after, you don't see him put a foot wrong. And that's where it is with goalkeepers. Like, the pressure on them is huge. I thought Kelleher was absolutely unbelievable today in everything he done. From short pass, long pass, getting rid of it when he needed to, making saves, you know, coming collecting stuff. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. The fullbacks. He goes with Gomez at left back. And I did kind of understand that when I seen it. I thought to myself, yeah, because if we get on top of this game, we need a bit more energy, a bit more kind of, you know, going a bit more oomph, as they call it, going forward. Maybe Robertson is where it is, but Gomez is such, he's so versatile that we may use him later. But the fullbacks and Gomez, I thought Gomez was okay in the first half. I thought he really came into it when he went to right back. But we're going to talk about Conor Bradley again, because honestly, the fella's on the pitch and I don't know where to go anymore with this fella, because it's literally, you're watching him, and again, I am not even considering his age, his experience, nothing. I'm just watching a player playing football at the highest level and looking like he's done so far. I'll put it this way. If you put him into the City side and said, you know, or you told me it was Kyle Walker playing for us, you know, with that much experience, I go, oh yeah, yeah. He's just a very, very, very good fullback with loads of experience. He just fits in seamlessly and is afraid of fucking nobody.
No, and there was a lot of that in the first half. Like, he wasn't afraid to throw his weight around along that touchline. Getting forward, I think he's excellent. I think he maybe, for that ball across for Nunes, where Nunes clatters the post, probably should have, was it that one? There was another.
There was one when he should have gone for a goal.
He should have actually just pulled the trigger. You're comparing Alisson and Caoimhín Kelleher. It's the same thing with Bradley and Trent. Like, there'd be a lot of calls for Trent to start playing more of a midfield role now as well. Still not on that train yet, but like you said, we're not the best thing that you can say about Bradley is that we're not. I don't think we're missing Trent. And if anything, people are shooting for this. I think he probably is defensively better. Yes. That's not to say that Trent, I'm not saying he's a bad defender, but I just think that, like, for someone, like, he looks like he weighs about 7 stone soaking wet, like, but he doesn't get pushed off the ball.
He's bigger than you
think. Yeah, no, he's
very broad. He's very broad.
Yeah, yeah, very broad. But he's really, really good on the ball. He doesn't get pushed off the ball. We're always talking about saving a fortune. I think we've saved an absolute fortune with Brett. Like, he's and he will be. I know he's Irish.
You've saved 100 million. Irish. I think you've saved 100 million easy. Pound on Bradley and Quanta.
Yeah,
easy.
Easy. Yeah.
Come the end of the season, you could be arguing possibly more. You see what players are going for these days. But I know he's Northern Irish or whatever. But I think he's you see him in his Liverpool jersey. He's another Elliot, just a right back. He's another fan who's living his dream. And again, we'll probably get on to Elliot. But like, that's all of it. That was all of our dreams when we were younger, to play for Liverpool. And he's doing it in front of 60,000, doesn't bat an eyelid, against arguably what people are saying is the best the team on the planet at the moment. And he actually, I don't want to say he made a show of them, but he stuck it
they're
to them.
Definitely, look, no matter how good we think he is, and Glenn Parsons is right, he says Emmett just said Trent is a shit Conor Bradley. There you go. He's
a hot take pod. We're selling Alisson and Trent here.
Ashley is extending her stats game by saying he's £141, which is exactly £1 above 10 stone.
10 stone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I've had bigger shites myself.
Kev says Alvarez is a proper player. He is very intelligent player as well. And Bradley did really well against another one where he's growing into the position, could have scored today too. And look, I know you're saying we don't miss Trent, but and maybe is Bradley better defensively than Trent? Maybe so. But Bradley is seeing, and let's get it straight here. Before Bradley starts playing with Liverpool, a lot of us see him as a really good defensive fullback, a really good solid right back. Bolton fans will tell you different. He's really good at going forward too. But let's have a straight. He's nowhere near the output of Trent going forward.
No, he just simply isn't.
We're not sitting there
counting the days. Look, we all want Trent to be back as soon as possible.
Yeah.
But we're not looking at the team sheet going, another game with Bradley. I hope he gets tripped. Like, you're not batting an eyelid.
Yeah, no.
And of course, he doesn't have the output. I tell you, but he does have output.
He does have output.
More output than some right backs.
Yeah, he does have the output. But you see, the thing is, the difference where I'd look at it is, if we're playing a team that's a really low block, and you'll probably see it at Old Trafford next week, where teams will just sit in, Trent, in that position, picks out a couple of absolute belt and balls. I'm not saying Bradley wouldn't, but Trent, you could nearly guarantee, is going to put one on a plate for fucking one or two players during the game. And Bradley may not have that in his game. For me, he's a bit more of a winger style fullback. Do you know what I mean? Like, likes to get in behind and whip a ball across and stuff like that. And Trent's done that before, but Trent's great at kind of dropping inside and going, right, give us that, and I'll just put one in from a mad angle and it'll be undefendable. We spoke a little bit about Van Dijk earlier, who I thought was immense during the game. Let's go for it.
Carragher's comment at the end was right, did you hear, when he said he thinks Van Dijk is a better centre-back than Haaland is a striker. So he thinks, you know, as much as he thinks Haaland's the best striker in the world, he thinks Van Dijk is a better centre-back than he thinks Haaland is a striker. So, I mean, that's pretty high praise. You know?
It is high praise, and Carragher's fairly open in saying that he thinks Van Dijk is the best centre-half the Premier League's ever seen. And I think it's hard to argue with. Right, but United fans or Chelsea fans or whatever the fuck, I don't really care.
Did you see the latest United fans are wheeling out Steve Bruce and Gary Pallister now as the centre?
Ah, yeah, of course. Steve Bruce wrote books, he's the king. Books, he's like, the king of all things.
Yeah.
But Van Dijk was immense, but that's for me where Van Dijk has been for the vast majority of the season. I think the one game at Arsenal where he kind of has a howler. But Gerald Kwanzaa comes in there and he hasn't had an awful lot of football recently. Let's be fair, he hasn't had an awful lot of football. I'm trying to think of Kwanzaa's last league start.
I think he played against Luton, did he?
Did he start against Luton?
Did he start in that one? I'm trying to think.
Maybe he did. I feel like he hasn't played an awful lot. I feel like Canate's had a real run in the team. But if you look at that and you're thinking to yourself, right, Kwanzaa, Bradley, Kelleher, that triangle, and no matter how good we think they are, City are going to look and go, we're getting at that, right? Whether they play Kwanzaa on the left-hand side and Van Dijk wants to try to help fucking Bradley or it goes the other way, whatever it might be. But I have to say, Keith, Kwanzaa doesn't put a foot wrong there today for me. And doesn't look out of place, doesn't look like he's being targeted. And it gets to the stage where he's coming out of the fence and everything. He's coming out of the fence and having bleeding shots and everything. Like, not a bother to him. He was excellent. He was just, and listen, spoiler alert, we're going to tell you they were all great, right?
Yeah, but, take it as given.
But he was really impressive, Keith, to come into that game. You know, he probably thinks on Thursday night, I'm not playing on Sunday, and now all of a sudden I am against one of the best attacking units in Europe. And he just plays the game. They all seem to just, and I keep going back to it, Keith, when Jurgen Klopp says it, they're young, but when they come on the pitch, they know what they have to do. And it's just another example of that. Unbelievable.
Jarrell Kwanzaa is the one, I think, that's really saving us a fortune. Conor Bradley will as well, because, you know, the fullback, we flogged our fullbacks for so long when we were really good. You know, Trent and Robert were playing all the time and we didn't really have much to row in behind them. But Jarrell Kwanzaa coming in at centre-back, and it's unfortunate what happened to Matip. You know, Matip's out. His career, Liverpool career, is dusted. Very sad. Jarrell Kwanzaa has taken the opportunity with both hands. And he has saved us, I'd say, 50 million. Because I think that would have been a clamour to go out and sign, for example, Levi Colwill. I don't see anything that Levi Colwill is that much more outstanding than Jarrell Kwanzaa. in any fast. And I like Levi Caldwell. I think he's good. I think he's got more experience.
And I'll happily admit I would have taken Levi Caldwell at the start of the season because I didn't know enough about Gerard Pont.
100%. And anyone that says otherwise is a liar. Mm-hmm. But I look at Jared Brantway, who I think is an excellent centre-back at Everton.
Mm-hmm.
He's not doing anything better than Jarrell Kwanza. Now, Jarrell Kwanza's only played, I think, 6 Premier League games or something for Liverpool. But the style and the skill set that Kwanza has is just, it's people call him Baby Virgil. And, you know, he is. He's not rash. We think back to Nat Phillips and Billy Cometio and Reece Williams. None of them looked like they could make it at Liverpool. Certainly, the Williams and Cometio struggle, I'd say, to have League One careers. But I thought maybe Nat Phillips could be a lower Premier League. That's fucking egg on my face now. Kwanza looks like a Liverpool centre-back. Kwanza looks like he can go into that team. And if they decide next season that they're going to say, right, Joe Matip is going to move on, we're going to bring in whoever the manager is, let's say for argument's sake, it's Ruben Amorim. Right, and I'm only using him for the purpose of the centre-back. Ruben Amorim comes in and he says, I'm bringing in Gonzalo Inacio, right? I don't know what he has that Kwanza doesn't have. He's probably a better passer of the ball or whatever. But he's only a young lad as well. But they might bring him in and they might move on Matip and they might just say, Roy Gomez is a utility player now. We don't need Gomez as centre-back. Because I think Kwanza has... no matter who you want to bring in, has put himself into the four for centre-back options next season. And that's the biggest compliment we can make. Like, he's saving us a fortune. He has absolutely saved us a fortune. Because I think when you look at the players we were linked with, Caldwell, they were talking 70 million. Do you know what I mean? Brantway, they're saying it'll go for 100 million. All this sort of shit. This kid looks as good, every bit as good as them and any other young centre-back in the league. Do you know, I think it's amazing how he's come in and looked so good. And it's off a small sample size, we know that, but he hasn't missed a beat.
I think the biggest vote for confidence of Jarrell Kwanza and where Liverpool see him and where they think he can go is Liverpool are playing Man City today at Anfield in a huge, huge, huge Premier League game. And the easiest thing to do would have been to put Joe Gomez in beside Virgil van Dijk and put Robertson at left back, and they don't. And not only that, they put Joe Gomez at left back and they don't ever think of going, will we take Kwanza off and put Joe Gomez into centre half and bring Robert. They never think of taking Jarrell Kwanza off. They never think we get through 60 with him, we take him off, put on Robertson, move Gomez. They never do that. Kwanza stays exactly where he is because, as I said, they know the job, they know what to do, they know what's expected of them, how to play, how to carry themselves. And he, like someone said, a couple of people today played himself into trouble once. Every player does that. Every player does it. But overall, I don't think, you know, maybe...
I think it was a bad ball by Virgil.
Yeah, maybe when I say he didn't put a foot wrong, what I mean is in a defensive way, he doesn't do anything where you nearly forgive him for jumping in on Haaland or something, or jumping in on someone and saying, well, I'm trying to leave me mark, or I'm trying to whatever. He's not. He's just going out and playing like he should. And, you know, he's the natural successor to Matip in the squad. And then you bring in someone that you would believe is the next Jarrell Kwanza as your fourth choice, maybe. But then you don't know what the new manager
is. Maybe there's another one at the academy.
Maybe there is. Or maybe you know, you never know. If Alonso comes in, does he bring Hincapie with him and say, right, I'm bringing him in? But there's no problem there. Bring Hincapie in and replace Matt. He replaces Matt at the fine. Perfect. It's another good player. Do you know the sort of way?
Do you know what his middle name is?
Mick.
Amarin.
Jarrell, whose middle name?
Amarin Kwanza.
Is it?
Jarrell Amarin Kwanza.
Oh, right. Okay, Jesus. The rumours around that'll be flying.
It's his dad.
Ruben's a good looking fella, in fairness. I'd say he slung a lot of dick in his day.
Jesus Christ. Anyway, talk to me about the midfield because I can't do these individually because we'd be here all night. But Endo McAllister Sobers, like, for me, Endo is a fucking joke today. I don't think he loses a tackle. I don't think he loses a duel. I don't even know if he gives the ball away. McAllister always seems in the right place at the right time, picking off stuff, making the right pass, moving with it when he needs to. Sobersley, I thought his press was brilliant all day and does really well in the 60 place. But once they got the grips of what he wanted to do, City shit themselves about this Liverpool midfield. They really, really
does,
did.
Does, There's people there saying that De Bruyne was moaning about being taken off. I just know, and that's what I was talking about earlier on. Endo, just the three of them didn't give them a minute.
Oh, unbelievable.
We couldn't have expected any more out of Szoboszlai after him being out for so long, because we all know that he'll still be running in the 99th minute. We've seen it earlier on in the season. Yeah, still pressing. Yeah. So it's great to see him back. But just McAllister and Endo were absolutely colossal today. They didn't give them a minute. The City players were trying to receive the ball on the half turn, and they were literally up their holes. Like, and
Endo had 96% pass completion in that game today.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was one stage where he literally comes out behind De Bruyne, takes the ball off him, and De Bruyne literally turns to the bench and throws his hands up in the air. Now, whether he's saying, get someone in here to help me or whatever, I don't think he was being asked to be called to take it off. But he literally, his head was gone. His head was gone. And then he's taken off 5 minutes later, and the two of them are arguing and all that. Just, Endo, why couldn't he be 21? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Now, there's a Japanese, you know this fella. There's a Japanese player still playing at 56 in Portugal.
What age is Endo?
Endo's 31. He's another 10 years at least.
41. A new 5-year deal tomorrow, in my opinion.
100%. Sign him up.
He's an animal. He's an absolute animal.
McAllister, the coolest player on the pitch, I have to say. Like, he just looks like he always has all the time in the world, but he just keeps the ball moving. Doesn't dwell on it. Now, I know earlier on in the season he probably was dwelling on it a little bit. He had the ball taken off his toe a few times, but he just keeps the game ticking over. And, like, we're just so lucky to have the pair of them in there, and Szoboszlai coming back. But Endo, more than he's, I know we'll probably ask it, I'm just going to tell you now, Endo was my man of the match. I just think he's invaluable now. He's an absolute warrior, like, and again, for 31, and I know he was out but he was at the Asian game. He just non-stop. He's an absolute machine.
Before we move on, he 96% pass accuracy, right? Of a lot of passes, lost possession four times, which is scandalously low.
Yeah.
But he won 4 out of 5 ground duels, and he won both of his aerial duels. He had them on toast today, and everybody was talking in the build up to this was all about Man City's midfield to be too much. If you look at that overlap shite and all that, they were saying the midfield were absolutely amazing today. And them two boys in there for 50 million, some of the best business we've ever done was them two.
Yeah. Rory, who loves a stat as well, says McAllister was excellent on the ball. So many times he took the ball in tight spaces. After Kwanzaa with 96 and VVD with 94, he had the third most touches on the pitch in 84 touches he took today, McAllister. And I don't know what his pass completion rate was. He looks to be a bit more progressive.
He looks to be a bit more progressive than it was 81%.
Yeah. And that's him trying to hit passes and get through the lines and bits like that.
On him.
Yeah.
He had 13 ground duels and he won 8 of them.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, when you're winning that majority, once you get over kind of 60% of your ground duels won, you're on top. You're definitely on top. It's not like you can have a look at a ding-dong battle with someone. When you start hitting over 60, 70% of your ground duel, that's when you're really, really on top of people. Darwin didn't have the best day today. He wins the penalty. He's caught offside about 11 million times in the first half, but I think that's him trying to get in behind. And it was nearly like it was something where it looked a bit designed at times. Go early and go. And if he gets caught, he gets caught. But it makes them think, do they step back? Will he get it right at one stage? And in their own head, they're starting to think, well, he's got caught a couple of times. If he gets this right, we're never catching him. But he does win the penalty. Gakpo comes on for him. Gakpo wasn't great when he came on, but I just think the tempo of that game. Some players did get to the foot of it. In fairness, so you know, Gakpo should really try to get the foot of it, but I think it just wasn't for him when he came on. Salah comes on, great chance to shoot to Diaz, and you know we get on to that now in a second. But to be honest with you, when Salah comes on, I'm thinking it'll be in City's mind first. but he's going to get whatever amount of minutes here and give him more on towards the end. I think he's raring to go then against United at the weekend. But let me talk to you about Luis Diaz, because he misses that chance. And again, I go back to what Kelleher, you know, everyone makes a mistake. He opens his body up and he just doesn't. He's trying to do the right thing, right? But I have to say, Luis Diaz today was fucking everywhere. And I mean everywhere. Kyle Walker didn't know whether to go with him, stay with him. If he stayed with him, he was going by Walker. If he didn't go with him, he was drifting into midfield. He was drifting centrally. He was getting... I just thought he was fantastic today. He ran every blade of grass. He ran himself into the ground. He does miss that chance. Yeah, he does miss it. That's the big talking point. He does miss that chance. But for effort and carrying a team up the pitch, and you can have loads of effort and you can carry a team up the pitch, but to carry that threat as well, Keith, I thought he was fucking sensational today.
I agree. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. He misses the chances, and he has three, I think, chances.
Yeah. The big one is the one where he's put through.
The one that Darwin nicks him in for, and he just doesn't get the touch right. That's unlucky. The one where he takes a touch and Stone sweeps off his feet. But yeah, the big one is the one that he doesn't open up for. But it's how he reacts to that, because you see players and they'll miss a chance. And I've said this about Darwin, he just brushes it off, doesn't give a shit. Look at Diaz's reaction to them misses. He carries the fight to Man City like you've never seen Kyle Walker getting put on toast as much as he was by Diaz today.
Do you know what he reminded me of? He reminded me of Suarez.
Yeah.
Where no matter what's going on here, comparison. I'm just going to relentlessly fucking go.
Three and four of them on him. Like, the one where he goes down the wing
and Rodri can't go near him, and Walker tries to do him, and he goes in, he does Walker, goes down, Rodri tries to chase him, Walker gets back, he comes inside, he comes out with the ball somehow, then he does lovely little touch, Walker falls on his arse and manages to get back up, and it hits him in the head and goes out for a corner.
Yeah.
But the big thing on that, Keith, is it's brilliant, first of all. Again, get you from your box to their box and you have a corner. But look at the reaction of the crowd, Keith.
Yeah,
the reaction of the crowd is like a roar, like a fucking feral roar. Like, this fella is like, if he's putting that in, we're putting it in with him. And it just, it's not as good as a goal because nothing is, but it's like, fuck me. Like, he's brought us 80 yards up the pitch here. Yeah. And Rodri can't get near him, and Walker's all up. Walker
looks under like immense pressure. It's not like he was running into just, you know, grass in front of him and he was running and carrying it. He was under pressure from the best defensive midfield player in the world. And one of the quickest players in England. And he absolutely carried the fight to them. And he'd done it a few times over on that touchline. Tight spaces, and he was little tricks getting out. And I think he let Bernardo Silva on his arse at one stage as well. He was brilliant, Gav. He was a constant threat. And if you're not going to have a good day in front of goal, make sure you have a good day putting in the effort and the graft. Because people will forgive you if you put the effort in. Do you know what I mean? Gakpo, I thought, was anonymous. I thought Salah was dreadful when he came on. I thought he made some terrible decisions when he got into good positions. But we'll forgive Mo. Mo has enough credit in the bank. Gakpo's low on confidence. But if Diaz had gone the other way and had been, you know, just hiding, he'd have got lashed out. But instead, he doesn't hide. He looks for the ball. And fans will forgive you for that. Liverpool fans will forgive you for that 99 times out of 100. If you put in the effort and you carry a fight to them like that, that's all you want. Now, not everyone, people online, I've seen people on Twitter moaning and bleeding, giving out because he missed the chances. Look, people miss chances. Haaland missed the bleeding opener last week and he's the best striker in the world, you know. So people miss, get over it. It's how do you react to it and what do you do to shake it off. And I thought he was absolutely brilliant today. That one where he goes down the line and puts a Walker on his arse and then flex up, Diaz collapses at the end of it.
Yeah.
He just falls down.
It's probably
down.
80 minutes or so in, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's around 80 minutes.
He just
minutes.
Falls down on it.
Okay.
Take your bleed on me.
Yeah.
We would look at watch-alongs, Gavin. We said it about Diaz that he keeps coming inside. And all you want to do, and you've said it, you just want to see him go outside.
Just vary it.
What he did today was he hasn't gone outside all season, and he said, right, today I'm going to make up for it. And he literally rinsed them. And that's supposed to be the best right back in the league, according to some. And like he said, left him on his hole. And Diaz did everything bar score today. And like we said, ran himself into the ground.
He was. I'm laughing here because Red Steve says, I'm no expert on visas, but how is Diaz's dad still in the country? Have we kidnapped him now?
living his best life, isn't he?
Yeah, he's having a great time. He's having a great time. But look, yeah, but
Diaz had a passing accuracy of 89% today as well. Sorry for coming across you there. Yeah. 33 out of 37 accurate passes. He uses the ball well. He's a winger, you know, wingers cross the ball. Yeah. He uses it very, very well.
I seen a really good point from someone on Twitter, and I don't know who, I can't remember who it was, so I apologise, and if I find it, I'll let you know who it was at some stage. But they said, look, yes, Diaz missed chances, but there's probably about four really good goal-scoring wingers on this planet, right? And he's not one of them, right? Which is a fair thing to say. But what you want from your wide players is you want them to occupy people, go with them, create chances, cause a bit of havoc. You know, and he does all of that in spades. Absolutely does it in spades. Like, and Gaz says there, the amount of minutes Diaz has played recently is mad to be able to do what he's done today. And yeah, that's another one. There you go. Jeez, he's played an awful lot of football. because he's been needed to, because the numbers have been kind of depleted and stuff like that. But I, like, when people say to me, like, oh, is he good enough? I'm kind of going, yeah, he is. Can he improve? Yeah. Is there scope to improve? Is he young enough to improve? Yeah. What age is he?
26 or
something. 5, 26. Right. No, I'm not saying, but he's not old. But what I'm saying is that, you know.
27.
Yeah. 27. So sell him. Sell him and Alisson and whoever else for Keith selling. Keith, you're falling into this bleeding rabbit hole now where you're selling the whole squad. You've done this a couple of years ago. But yes, you can improve on that. And the one mark against him. Should he have scored today? Yeah, the one throw and goal he should. Because I actually think the keeper sells himself a little bit. Yeah. And if you get it anywhere on target, I think
goes down,
anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but other than that, he was absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Let's finish up with the decision at the end.
Can we talk about one more player before we do? And I know we're running really. Harvey Elliott hasn't got a
I forgot to mention. I left him out because he came back in the midfield. Yeah, go on, talk to
him. He was fucking brilliant today. Now, I think we had a problem in the first half. I think Nunes was too isolated up front because I think Harvey was dropping into midfield pockets, which he's excellent at. And there was no sort of support getting up to Darwin, and I think he was too detached from the rest of them. But that wasn't to say Elliott was playing bad. He just wasn't Salah. He just wasn't, you know, hugging a touchline or pushing in behind him. But that kid, he, Jesus Christ, like we spoke a few months ago about being an impact sub and you know, coming on to games and changing games and winning games for Liverpool. He's now doing it from the start. I mean, he's played, I think, in the last five or six. I think he came off in a couple of times. But in general, the Umfla is putting in the shift and the graft. And again, it's like you said about Diaz. If you're going to work hard in that team, you might not get the numbers for goals and assists. But if you're putting in the work and the effort, and I think he's seen the rewards of it, I think he's been excellent. And I thought today he was fucking brilliant.
I think the funny thing is, I think when you look at Harvey Elliott, and I think a lot of people might be guilty of this, they look at Harvey Elliott and they start judging him against what you would consider a player at the peak of his ability or the peak of his progression or that's him complete. And he's not. He's 21 years of age, right? 20, 21. Keith, you know all the ages tonight. What have you got? Have you got the fucking Birth, Deaths and Marriages website open or something? What's going on here?
20.
Yeah,
it's
only 20.
20. Yeah. So, and that's what, when people are looking at him going, is he quick enough to be a wide man in this team? You know, maybe not. Is he physical enough to be a number eight? Well, maybe, you don't know. You know, but what you're seeing from him there, he's winning headers and all today, you know what I mean? But what you're seeing from him, when you look at Harvey Elliott, you have to understand that this is a player at 20 years of age, 103 or 4 games now for Liverpool, right, which is phenomenal for a start. But he's still very much at, his career is at its infancy, right? Let's be perfectly clear about this. But when you look at him now, and when I look at him and I think the amount of games he started recently, that whole impact sub thing is starting to wear off very, very quickly. Because when he was making an impact as a sub, we had numbers in midfield, we had numbers up front, and it was like, look, Harvey, you're 20 years of age, there's a pecking order here. But now you're looking at him going, I've no problem. I do have a problem with him playing right side up front. I'm going to be honest with you. Because
depending on the opposition, I think.
Yeah, but I don't think it suits him. I just don't think it suits in the way we play, because we do look to get our wide men at people, where he likes to cut back and stuff like that. But when I look at him and I think to myself, 20 fucking years of age, like, what's this season going to do to him? What's next season going to do for him? You mean, and when we look at all these players that come in, like Szoboszlai, Endo, Gravenberch, you know, all these players that have come in the summer, right? It's, you know, and McAllister, and you're looking saying to yourself, this is, what are they going to be like next season? And we were thinking that back in August. Get what we can out of them this season. Next season, you'd be looking at the real progression in them and the whole lot. Elliot's in the same boat. He's a young player. Curtis Jones is probably close to that as well. But he's a young player that is continuously progressed. If he was standing still, like, oh, I'm worried. Yeah. I'm worried because every time he comes into the team, he looks like, ah, is he doing it? But he's genuinely, like, taking leaps and bounds, probably isn't the right way to describe it, but it's a general progression every time you see him now, where he's more intelligent on the ball. He's, and off the ball is the huge thing for me. Off the ball, he knows where to be, when to go and when not to go. And I just think you really have to, before you even start contemplating talk about Harvey Elliott, you need to say to yourself, he's 20 fucking years of age. In a Liverpool side that have gone through a massive transition over the summer, have been dealt this kind of shocking news that Klopp is going to leave, and he's turning up, and the amount of minutes that fella's played in the last 4 weeks for Liverpool is off the scale. Yeah. And he's gone from here to there, play out there, play here, play in this, play against this big side, that big side. Like, he could have been whipped today. He's young, take him off, get someone in there, throw anyone in there, and you know, it's Man City. But they don't just go, here, you go and play in the eight there. No problem. Don't give a fuck who they're playing. You go and play in the eight, because we know you can. And that's where I think when we look at Harvey Elliott, we have to remember his age and we have to remember the progression. And I think the last four or five weeks has been huge for him. Absolutely yeah. Huge for him. So I'm glad you stopped me and made me mention that. But this thing at the end, there's a claim by Salah for a penalty. It's not a penalty. No. But this one is for me. And I want to kind of caveat this again with, I'm happy with Liverpool got a point, right? I'm not going to kick and scream over it. There's no fucking point, right? I'm sure, you know, everyone will tell you just to move on and, you know, these things happen. But drop balls last week were the fucking biggest contentious thing in football since Joe Havelange a fucking FIFA.
Monumental error.
Right? But it's a penalty. And my only thing on this is, and I'll let you two have a go at it, but my only thing on this is, if you make a tackle, if you foul somebody on a football pitch, right, it's a foul. The only difference is that on certain parts of the football pitch, you get a foul and it's a free kick where the other team had to be 10 yards away, but they can all be behind the ball, right? And other parts of the football pitch, i.e. the penalty boxes, if you make the same foul, how severe the punishment is goes up. You get a penalty, you and the goalkeeper, nobody in front of you. That's it. There's none of this, all that happens. You know, Jamie Carragher said tonight, well, you know, and this, and I'm kind of ad-libbing a little bit on this, but this is the genuine gist of what he said. He says, referees blow the whistle for these sort of things in the midfield because, look, it's easy to blow up there and no one really cares. But these things, what happen in the box, can decide games or titles. So, you know, it's 50-50 for me. So there's no sense to that. There's absolutely no sense to that. It's a bit like saying, Rodri got a yellow there in the first half for taking out McAllister, but it's in the box and, you know, could decide the league, this. So I'm not too sure. What makes you unsure between one, if it's a free kick on the halfway line, what makes it different when it's in the box? Keith, is there a difference? Because I've never heard of it. I've never read a rule that says tackle A is a free kick anywhere in the pitch, but the same tackle may not be a penalty in the penalty box.
Yeah, it's outrageous. No, of course not. I mean, and Carragher, in fairness, because I think he made a tit of himself and he's on Twitter there, bleeding, having scraps with everyone about it. This nonsense about there has to be more contact in the penalty box for it to be a penalty. Okay, we take that at face value. This had enough contact. Like, what's the issue? Do you know what I mean? Like, this is a foul. anywhere on the pitch. This isn't one that it's like, right, it's a foul anywhere on the pitch, but, you know, there has to be a bit more force. This is a high foot. So a high foot happens anywhere. It's a foul, number one, right? So it's a high foot. They're talking about it hitting Docu's foot first. It hits McAllister's chest first, and then the tackle comes in. This happens anywhere else. It's a foul. It's a high foot. It's a foul. It doesn't have to be, you know, Nigel de Jong and Xabi Alonso in the World Cup final type of impact for it to be a foul. Like, what's the threshold here? Do you know what I mean? Like, in they saying fouls in the box that, you know.
And I did hear the Sky guy saying, oh, the high bar. And I was like, what high bar?
Well, yeah, Klopp went to town when he said that. High bar. And this is the get-out-of-jail clause on VAR in England. Stuart Atwell is the VAR today. He's a jellyfish. Always has been. His first big refereeing thing, he gave a goal that didn't go in the championship game about 10 years ago, and he's a laughing stock. Michael Oliver is one of the top referees in England. He was not going to, and by the way, he had a great view of that, so I don't know why he wasn't giving it.
Well, I did see an angle where I'm not sure 100% on his view, right? Because he's in a very generic position for where the ball is, where they try to stay kind of off center where they can see an awful lot of the box for anything happening. But if he thinks Doku's kicked that and it's gone up in the air, right? Fair enough, right? Because if Doku kicks that and he kicks it and loops it up in the air, I'm okay with it. But the thing is, like, people are going, all right, hits Doku's full force. That doesn't matter. We've seen this loads of times where a player hits a ball, follows through, and takes a fella out with the ankle, or takes a fella out fucking higher up, or wherever it might be, and there's a foul given.
Dangerous, reckless.
You know what I mean? It's follow through, and it's stupid more than anything.
Like, whether it's a red card or not is the question.
No, I don't even think it's a booking. I just think it's, you've been stupid. The ball is there. A fella's coming in into Chester, and you've decided, instead of going in with him, you've decided that you're going to lift your feet up, studs first, and you're going to make slight contact with the ball and just go straight through this fella. Do you know what I mean? If that's the case, then why aren't players just running their foot, studs over a football and just planting it straight down on someone's ankle and going, I touched the ball. So that's no argument. That's no argument.
It shouldn't be in this day and age. Yeah, but
Jones touched the ball against Spurs.
I get that. Yeah. But you see, that's what I'm saying. The follow through and stuff like that, right? But Emma, okay, give Oliver the benefit of the doubt. He sees this, he thinks what he sees is a player making contact with a ball or not making contact with a player or whatever it might be. Because one angle I did see, I was kind of going, I'm not too sure if he sees the whole thing. But that's where VAR step in, right? And whether it's he doesn't make any decision at all, just doesn't make any gesture at all, he just lets the play run on, right? I think he does make a gesture of like no penalty, right? But if he makes no gesture, the VAR can say, you clearly haven't seen that. You need to go and look at this. I think it's a penalty, or whatever it might be. Or if he makes the decision, that's where the clear and obvious starts to come in now. Clear and obvious. It's not clear and obvious that, you know, he's kind of said no, and I don't think it's clear and obvious that he's wrong. That's bullshit, Emma. Right? And again, I'll go back to it. Liverpool have drawn a football game today. I'm quite happy with it. I make Liverpool favourites for the title now, and I think they'll win it. Right? And anyone can clip that up. I don't really give a fuck. But Emma, that's where VAR have to step in and go, one, no, that's a penalty. Or two, Michael, just come over and have a look at this because he gets a little nick on the ball, but the follow-through takes the player out. Do you know what I mean? Like, if that's on the ground, Emma, and he goes over the ball, right, he gets a touch on the ball, right, gets a touch in it, player knocks it by him, he gets a little touch in it, but he takes your man out with the ankle. It's a penalty kick. Like, I don't see how the likes of fucking Carragher or anybody else is, and I think it might be Neville in commentary says, I think he's in trouble here. He thought it was a penalty.
Yeah.
And
so did Mike Dean.
Yeah.
Mike Dean says, I think he's going to go to a pitch side review here. I think he's going to go to the screen. And then it was like, oh no, they've
got a touch.
I was like, what?
But he hit behind that, he got a touch crap. And
I think Matt said it on the post, the reaction show. Gakpo got one somewhere else on the pitch last year.
And we were at the game, card. Villa. It was the Villa game. We were at.
And
he had the yellow card.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter. There's so many examples, like you've said there.
Sorry, Shea Given on Match of the Day has said he didn't feel it was a penalty either.
X-Man City keeper.
Yeah, of course. Shea Given. Of course. Oh, yeah.
There's so many examples that you can pull up where the player gets the ball forced and continues on through. This is worse. This is chest high. You shouldn't be raising your foot that high anywhere on the football pitch, especially if there's someone coming towards you to try and challenge for the same ball. And I've not seen it back because I had to go out straight after the game. So Keith says it hits McAllister's chest force. So he didn't even get to the ball force.
The talk is that it does, but
that's not even.
I'm sure it does hit his foot, but
if that ball drops down,
it doesn't matter.
If that ball drops down, Doc Hugh goes to kick it and kicks it, and McAllister comes in after the kick has been made and he catches him. Fair enough. You're in the motion of kicking a football and a player runs into you. I'm okay with that. But the issue here is that as the ball drops, McAllister knows what's coming, by the way, because he actually turns as he tries to chest it. And as he goes to chest it, Doc Hugh lifts his foot up to literally up to nearly under his armpit, right? And literally doesn't kick the ball. It just happens to hit him as he goes and plows into Alexis McAllister. And somebody said it there, it's a penalty, because if it happens at the other end of the pitch, I'm absolutely fuming at my defender.
For why doesn't he hit it?
Why doesn't, not even why doesn't he hit it? When that ball goes to drop down, why isn't Doku standing there going, I'm going to let this fella chest it and then I'm going to use my body to protect the ball and get rid of it? He just looks and goes, fuck it, and just puts his foot up and goes straight through him. And look,
and they looked worried. They knew it was a penalty.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. They looked worried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I just can't. Again, I go back, hey, looking for consistency. This touch of the ball arc is ridiculous. And this whole argument around, oh, well, everyone else in the pitch, kind of no one cares, so, you know, it's easy. That's a cop-out, a complete and utter cop-out. And look, I'm not saying Liverpool would have scored the penalty. I'm not saying, you know, whatever. But I am saying, I'm happy with the point today for Liverpool. I thought they were excellent. But again, we're sitting here talking about, A, did a referee see it or not? And if he did, or if he seen what he thought he's seen, it at least needs a VAR to go, listen, come and look at it. How was it over so quickly? The ball drops down next to all. I was like, no penalty. I was like, what? You've reviewed that quick, yeah? Because honestly, when you're reviewing other stuff, you're slowing things down. You're watching it from fucking 14 angles. But this one seems to be, no, it's not. You're absolutely fine. Absolutely fine.
They were never given it at that time of the game as well.
Well, that's your argument. If that happens 20 minutes into the game.
Yeah, it's a definite penalty. There's no argument.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's that's reffing the occasion and not the game. Do you know what I mean? It's fucking stupid. It's so infuriating when it happens because it's a foul. You know, and I've been on social media tonight and I'm getting the, oh, you was reading so vocal last week about epoxy drop ball, which, you know, we said is the equivalent of giving a throw the wrong way. You know what I mean? Like a ridiculous comparison.
And the thing, and to be fair, when we were talking about that, we felt that Paul Tierney got both decisions wrong.
Yeah.
At Nottingham Forest. We never said what he done was correct. We actually said it was wrong. We felt it wrong on both occasions. Now, subsequently after that, people are saying, no, he blows the whistle before a Liverpool player touches it on one side. He doesn't blow it until Hudson-Odoi, was it? Had it. And it was like, maybe he got it right, maybe he got it wrong. But the thing is, this isn't Liverpool didn't get something there and 3 minutes later City scored. Oh, what the fuck? That's completely different. What I'm saying is the only argument people are coming out with, is A, he gets a touch in it, which is, it's nonsense. And the second one is, Asher is in the box.
Yeah.
So what are we doing? Are we just going to continue to let things happen in the box? Arsenal for Life says it's lonely at the top. Let us know, Arsenal for Life, if you thought that was a penalty at the end. You won't be top for long anyway. I wouldn't worry about it.
No, he didn't take it. It's Arsenal.
No, in fairness, I've seen a couple of Arsenal fans myself.
And you said it before.
And they were saying, you know, delighted with the draw, but that's just completely a penalty kick.
There's a few of them, all right, Jeff.
I don't know. Like, I'm sure, you know, Dermot Gallagher will be right. Is Dermot Gallagher still doing the old shift on Sky?
Yeah. He'll be out with Stephen Warnock and Lee and Sue Smith tomorrow.
Yeah. It's... look, we'll see what's said about it, but I would find it hard for anybody to come out with a really constructive argument against that not being a penalty.
Klopp's post-match interview was excellent. I'm sure everybody's seen it, right? Yeah. It was fucking brilliant. And he's shown that he's going for fuckers now. He doesn't care. And he calls out Mike Dean. I was going to say Mike Riedel, Frank Butcher. Mike Dean calls him out and the others. And he's talking about Dermot Gallagher. And he's talking about the likes of Peter Walton. These referees that come on and offer absolutely nothing but defend refereeing decisions. And it's the most pointless thing in the fucking world. We spoke jokingly about Clattenburg, Gladiators ref Mark Clattenburg last week having a say on a drop ball. Mike Dean already came out and backtracked, you know. Dermot Gallagher, I guarantee you, will say it's a penalty, he'll then backtrack and say, oh, but the VAR can't overrule because of the high VAR and all this shit. There'll be an excuse for it.
Yeah, and that's but the VAR aren't overruling. The VAR are advising them to go and have a look. They're not overruling.
They should be, but they should be fucking overruling them. What's the point in having it? If you miss a key decision, have a look at it.
Yeah. We need to know who made the decision today because we don't know.
Well, VAR clearly made the decision because what happens is...
But that's what I'm saying. But the referee does
a gesture where it's like no penalty, from what I can remember.
Yeah.
He does a gesture like that. And then we're in, I would say, 15 seconds to VAR is clear because it ends up going out for a throw, I think. And then it was like, no, we're continuing on. And I was like, okay, all right. But look, it is what it is. You know, everyone will be telling you to get on with it. Everyone will be telling you fucking this, that, and the other. But at the end of the day, it's a thing. Where are we at, man?
Homeboy, great comment there. Sue Smith wouldn't get a ride in prison herself, Lock H.
Who's Sue Smith?
She's the Scouse girl with the quiff that does the ref watch show with Stephen Warnock. Big Everton fan.
Oh, she's
a sound girl, you know what I mean?
But look, we leave it there. It did end 1-1. Liverpool top of the league with Arsenal.
Great Arsenal game as well.
Well, it's a brilliant game. Brilliant game. Liverpool have got the second leg against Sparta Prague on Thursday. They also have the United game on Paddy's Day in the FA Cup. And then they have a two-week break until they play Brighton at Anfield, I think. Yeah. Before we go, thanks a million to everyone for watching. Millions of you in there tonight. One person didn't like it. Sorry. Loads of people have liked it. Hey. The like button. Before you leave, subscribe if you can. Links are in the description for our fundraiser. I'm going to give us a pass this week, but the link is there if you want to do it. I'm not going to tell you all about it. I'm sick telling you now because none of you fucking donate us. The rest of the week, I'll be back tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. And we'll be back tomorrow night with 3 topics. At 10 p.m., we will have, I've got to do as many mornings as we can this week. We're going to have the greatest on Wednesday, which is a member show. We're going to do stuff possibly Tuesday, Wednesday, definitely Thursday night, not Friday. And then we'll be back, for United at the weekend. Great long show tonight. Love it. Night all to Zushin. Yeah, it was long. We're going about an hour and a half, but it needed saying. Whatever was said needed saying, we think. Aaron Copley says it was clear and obvious. Even most City fans are admitting it. Yeah, well, I just, if you can find me someone that can explain why that's not a penalty, and don't tell me because it was in that area of the pitch when it happened in the field, please don't do that. So that's it. Emma, anything else before we go?
Just to say that our lads set their stall out today to show that they're not going away. I don't think City were up to the job today. I think they probably, I don't want to say the word bottled it, but they weren't hungry for it. We wanted it more. We wanted to win it more. No, we didn't win it, but we should have. We wanted it more, and that's going to bode well for the rest of the season, I think. So I'm on board with us still winning the league.
Well, honestly, as of now, I'd make Liverpool favourites for the title. Scouseby said, are you sure, Gav, the 30s become rarer than an Anthony goal involvement? Yeah, it's just being mad with walking stuff. It's absolutely being mad. But I'll be back as many mornings as I can this week. I promise you. You're still probably getting bleeding the mini shows a month anyway for your £4 if you want to be a member, and it's good cracking the member shows. Keith, anything else before we go?
Nah, this means more, Gav, as we've all said. So fuck them, fuck Man City. Let's win the league, let's win everything and go out on a blaze of glory, because it looks like the Reds are trying to do their best to do everything this year. They're not letting up in any of these trophies. So this is going to be a special one, and let's celebrate it all in May.
Yeah, happy days. Right, that has been the Talking Cop for Sunday night. Thanks a million to Keith. Thanks a million to Emma. Thanks a million to everyone in the chat. The comments have been brilliant tonight. I've thrown millions of them up there as the night went on and read out so many as well. Talk to you tomorrow. Up the Reds. Over and out. Podcast Network.